from Michael R. Underwood, author of Geekomancy, Shield and Crocus, and more, comes Genrenauts, a science fiction adventure series in novellas. Fantasy, mystery, science fiction. We know these genres from TV and comics and more, but in Genrenauts, each genre is also a world unto itself, inhabited by archetypal characters and filled with the tropes we all know and love. When stories go off track, you send in the Genrenauts. This team of narrative specialists travels across dimensions to find, evaluate, and fix broken stories, lest the ripples manifest as violence and upheaval in our own world. Struggling stand-up comedian Leah Tang is recruited to join the Genrenauts as stories are breaking at a record pace. Will she adapt to the bizarre and dangerous life of a Genrenaut, or will she end up as just another broken story? From May 9th to June 9th, Genrenauts is kickstarting a Season 1 collected edition, comprising all six novellas. Head to michaelrunderwood.com/kickstarter today to back the campaign and help shape the future of Genrenauts.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
I mean, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
angels are love!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
Captain America Civil War, the best Spider-Man movie since the one with Dr. Octopus.
Wow. You really went for the vein on that one, Paul.
But he's not lying.
He's not wrong.
Nope.
Sorta. But, yeah. Okay. Fair enough, Paul. Fair enough. Well, I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Mike.
And if it's not already obvious, because it should be obvious, we're here to talk about Civil War, a Marvel movie from Disney.
Not the actual Civil War.
No, that if you Google Civil War, you'll be very confused.
Yeah, people were talking about, like, man, that new Ken Burns movie is weird.
Oh, wonderful.
I think those were the best jokes to come out of this film, really.
Yeah, sure. Well, in any case, yeah, so we're gonna hash out what we normally do. We'll start with an explanation of what the movie is. We'll offer our general reactions, and then we each have a little bit that we want to talk about, and then we'll go from there. And then if you want to scream at us, there'll be stuff at the end of the episode where you can tell us what you think about us. Only maybe don't do that. You should just actually respond to our opinions like normal people who argue.
Yeah, fair enough. Good.
Yeah. So let's start with who would like to tell us what this movie is about, even though I think most people have figured it out at this point.
Not me.
I'm it. Fine. I'm going to do it. Okay. So the basic premise of Civil War is it's sort of a bounce off of what we got in the last Avengers movie, Age of Ultron, where essentially Iron Man has come to this point where the international community is starting to reject superheroes and some of the things that they do. And in order to sort of respond to it and to sort of deal with his own guilt about some of the things that he has done, he proposes and supports this legislation to essentially get, essentially it's like a registry for superheroes in order to control what they do, which would include, of course, putting the Avengers under sort of like a lock and key run by an international community. As is expected, and as the trailers made clear, Captain America is not too pleased about this. We may want to discuss why later. And the result of that, of course, is that the two sides of the Avengers sort of split, and we have what amounts to the title in the movie, which is a civil war, a bunch of superheroes fighting each other, in the midst of which is and deeper conspiracy, which I don't know if we want to reveal at this particular point, but we may discuss later after a spoiler wall, which of course has to do with why the Avengers are splitting and fighting one another. There's something deeper going on that even Iron Man and Captain America are completely unaware of. And so that's kind of the premise of this movie. It's a really basic premise. Mm-hmm. It gets more complicated when you start to look at some of the politics, which I know Jenna's more or less going to discuss, so we'll probably get to that in a bit. So I think that gets it.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yep.
Sweet. So why don't we start with general reactions, which is what we always do, and we're going to go to you, Paul, since you were the first up on my screen. General reactions to the movie, sir.
Well, I was relatively disappointed in Age of Ultron on a number of levels, and so I went into this movie wondering if the magic of the Marvel Cinematic Universe was starting to wind down for me. I mean, Ant-Man had its problems, mainly surrounding how they treated Hope Van Dyne. So I was wondering, okay, well, what are we going to do with this one? And I was, there are structural issues with this movie. And if you look at the plot too long, it doesn't really make sense or hold together, but I was vastly entertained by this movie, much more than Age of Ultron, which was a sincere relief to me. And it's a plotline that makes more sense than the comic it's ostensibly based upon.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, Jen, jumping to you. What do you think?
I largely agree with Paul. I would make stronger statements in that I thought Age of Ultron was one of the worst things I've seen in years.
Yeah, have you seen Iron Man 2?
Yes, that was a terrible movie, but not as bad as Age of Ultron. So I
disagree.
Captain America Civil War being incredibly worried because of the number of characters that are in it. I will say now, and we may hash it out a little bit later, I think this was a much better Avengers film. In my opinion, I enjoyed it more than both of the Avengers movies. As an Avengers movie, which it basically is. I think Captain America, calling it Captain America, is a bit of a misnomer, although it is based on the comic book run of Captain America, Civil War. So I really think that's the only reason they kept the title. It is disappointing to me as a Captain America movie, because I didn't get the resolution I really wanted between Cap and Bucky, which was set up in the previous film, in Winter Soldier, which I still think is the best MCU film to date. I did, however, really enjoy the movie. I don't think it had the heart that Winter Soldier had, which was basically my one problem overall. So but still highly enjoyable.
So I'm guessing you did not like the kiss at the end?
The kiss at the end?
God, you're supposed to run with my jokes, Jen. Jeez.
How long
there was,
you
there was only one kiss that I remember, and even that one was slightly disappointing to me, but, you know.
Yeah, that one was a nothing burger.
Well, yeah, it was not a sexy kiss by any stretch. It was no Spider-Man 1.
That one's hard to live up to, though.
to be fair, yeah. Yeah, apparently that kiss was really hard to do because basically Tobey Maguire was drowning every time they were doing it because all the water going down his face.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
So
apparently it looks sexy on screen, but in actuality, I don't think most people would do it.
Basically everything involving anything sexual in every movie ever made.
Yeah, it's probably not as sexy.
Just FYI.
As it seems. Yeah, fair enough. All right, Mike, general reactions from you, sir.
Yeah, so I really had a great time watching the movie. You know, I went out and saw it at a nice restored theater with a bunch of friends. I'd been hearing mostly good things leading into it. And I agree with Jen that for me, Winter Soldier is the best MCU film. And I was excited for this one. Overall, I had so much fun with the big airport set piece. It did a lot of the things that I want from a big kind of crossover superhero movie in terms of action. And the big thing for me was that I did feel like it had a lot of heart and that it was very much guided by characterization and what the characters thought and their relationships to each other. So focusing in on that part, I was really satisfied. I do think it definitely has some problems and would not rank it above Winter Soldier in terms of kind of execution. It's definitely not as tight as Winter Soldier. I think it has some good emotion. And I was just overjoyed by several of the moments throughout the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
Ant-Man! Sorry.
What?
Ant-Man.
Yes, he's in this movie.
I know, I'm just saying that was one of the moments that I was actually absolutely overjoyed.
And, oh, okay.
Like, the now movie had all about. Kinds of problems, but him showing up was just yeah. delightful.
Tic-tac!
That was fun. Okay, so my general reactions. It was better than Age of Ultron.
That's not saying much. I'm sorry.
Well, so I've got some serious issues with this film. I don't buy some of I buy some of the motivations, but then I don't buy some of the other motivations of certain characters. Some of the aspects of the politics of this movie don't make any sense to me. And are somewhat poorly explained or not explored enough for me. I'm sure we'll get to that because I know that's Jen's topic is the politics of the movie. And you're specifically talking about this in comparison to some other films. But I will say that it felt like a slightly tighter movie than Age of Ultron. It was certainly more fun than Age of Ultron at times. I liked the villain that's in this movie, even though he is sort of a very soft villain.
So good.
But I actually really liked that. I liked that we got now not just like big bad villain. It was now like, no, here is a villain who is not a superhero, right? He is, his villainy is much more sinister because it's sort of, we'll probably get to it later. Yeah. So I like some of those aspects. I had a lot of issues with some of the visuals, which I'm going to talk about later. I mostly enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. There were a lot of aspects I liked, but I will agree with what has already been said, too, that this isn't a Cap movie. I mean, my friend who I saw it with, and I don't know if she's right, but she was under the impression that Iron Man had more screen time than Captain America.
Oh, I think so, too.
Which is a problem, because the movie is not called Iron Man with a Side of Captain, right?
That's the name of several AO3 fics.
Yes. Yeah, so I think that making, I honestly feel like maybe instead of making Age of Ultron, they could have tried to find a different way to get to the Civil War and have the Civil War be an Avengers movie. Because it just makes more sense as an Avengers movie than a Captain movie. And I felt like the Captain movie would have been the aftermath of this movie.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
I wonder if there's if there was a contractual thing where Chris Evans' contract said, you will star in this many kind of single character movies and this many crossover movies. So that this one needed to be a Captain America movie to finish out his contract.
Is his contract finished?
I know that he's been talking about wanting to get out of acting, or at least out of this role, because I think it's incredibly physically demanding.
But he's retracted that recently.
He's actually just recently been talking about how he really wants to re-up and keep exploring the character.
He's definitely within his rights to change his mind.
Yeah, so you are right that he did say when he first started out on all of this that he was hesitant to even take the part because it's such a big role with a big long contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it comes with a lot of public pressure. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was his reasoning, right? He was really hesitant. He knew it was going to require a lot of physical things from him, da da da. But apparently that's something that's softened because one of the things that he said in some interviews is that the great thing about these movies is he's paid really well, right? And he's only doing one of these movies like every year. Mm-hmm. And that has seemed to open up for him career-wise that he's been doing a lot of other stuff he'd want to do, like directing.
Right.
And he seemed to be like, I actually, like, after a while, this felt really good, and I would actually like to stick around. At least he said he's open to the idea. I don't know what Marvel's plan is.
Right. But I do think I feel like he's really become even more comfortable in the role.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he was very strong in Winter Soldier, and I liked him from the beginning, but as several people, I think, like, Saladin Ahmed may have been one. I saw a number of people online, like, mostly on Twitter, say that they really felt like he'd matured in the role and that it was a more mature version of Cap, and I definitely agree.
Yeah.
It does feel so, and it makes sense, too, right, given how naive Captain America is, right, from the very first film. Yeah.
Yeah, he fits more in his role, particularly over time, than any of the other actors, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, Robert Downey Jr., obviously, as Tony Stark is great. It's a great fit. But I think Chris Evans feels the most comfortable of all of them.
That may be true.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. But he's confirmed for 2 more films after this.
Okay. So I'm guessing at least the 2 Infinity War movies?
Both the Infinity War movies, none of the others. So we'll see.
Well,
what happens? I wish we had a third Captain America. I mean, 4th.
Well, let's just say 3rd. Let's just say 3rd.
3rd, really.
This is Avengers 3. This is Avengers 3. We can all admit it, and then we can move on, and we can start thinking about Infinity Gauntlet as Avengers 4 and 5. Yeah. Or 4 and 4 and a half. Whatever. All right. Any case. All right. So I think we kind of covered that. But now we should dive into some of the specific things that we wanted to discuss, and obviously there'll be some organic flow from that conversation while we babble about other things and then scream at each other, which will mostly, I think, be Jen and I, because Jen hates my opinions about everything.
That's not true.
That's mostly true.
It's mostly true.
If PolitiFact checked it, it would be considered mostly true. So.
Right.
So, but we'll start with, I think maybe we should start with Jen, because your topic was the politics, and that seems to be one of the more general topics that we had, and I feel like that'll get us into talking the more specifics later. So I want to start with you, Jen. Your perspective on the politics, in particular, I remember you recall saying that you wanted to do a somewhat comparison between this film and Winter Soldier.
I'd specifically like to say, well, not necessarily compared to Winter Soldier. I think Winter Soldier, one of the things that it did well was that it was both a great character study, but also tied it in beautifully with sort of modern politics, and was a great political statement piece, if you will, on freedom versus government surveillance and things like that. And I think that this film could have gone there, and they kind of... To me, it didn't stretch its muscles as much as it could have. The politics of this film are essentially that the Avengers clearly have screwed up a few times. Although I saw a hilarious gif that was about how really everything has actually been Tony Stark's fault. which could be argued, for sure. They've had some huge fights in the films. They've definitely affected civilian populations very heavily. Lots of death. And you see Tony Stark in the beginning of this meeting the mother of somebody who was lost during Avengers Age of Ultron in Sokovia. Alfre Woodard, she's amazing. Why she only gets to be on screen for 5 minutes is beyond me, but that's an entirely different conversation. But he is finally having to face the fact that people have died due to the actions of the Avengers. As that is happening, the nations of the world are dealing with the repercussions of the fight that the Avengers have just gotten in Lagos. Nigeria, which opens up the film. And the Scarlet Witch accidentally, kills probably a number of people, including the Wakandan, some people from Wakanda who are there, I think, on a diplomatic mission. So the nations are coming together to sign what are called the Sokovia Accords, which basically, as Duke mentioned in the sort of recap, is that the Avengers have to function under the control of a United Nations committee. My problem with that is that that's all it is. And frankly, the entire team has been basically functioning under sort of not government complete control, but with government nods, as they were SHIELD at a certain, you know, before the events of Winter Soldier. Clearly in the second Avengers film, they are not government, but that's totally Tony Stark's fault anyway. So, but it's just them. And so it becomes, instead of a fight that's actually about principle. Although they try to frame it as a fight about principle in this film, because Tony Stark believes that, yes, we have to operate under government sanction. Otherwise, you know, what are we? We're just vigilantes. Cap disagrees because, obviously, and as Cap should disagree, this is a man who has lived through the Second World War and the Nazi regime. So registration of any sort and living under sort of the vagaries of governance, which can change its mind regularly, he's not comfortable with. He doesn't trust it.
Well, not to mention that Winter Soldier gave him probably the biggest reason not to trust organizations of any sort.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Winter Soldier was a government project.
Oh, I didn't mean Winter Soldier itself. Sorry. I meant the effects in Winter Soldier with the big ships and everything.
I would go with both ways, actually.
Yeah, because, it could be either way.
You're not going to trust it because Bucky literally was a government tool. And you're not going to trust it.
That's his concern, right? He says that explicitly.
Yeah. And that's Bucky's concern. That's why Bucky doesn't want to get trapped, because he knows he'll be used again. But unfortunately, I think it narrows the focus so much of the political ramifications of who the Avengers are that at times it really just felt like an ego battle to me. To be honest, Tony being, you know, kind of angsty and pissed off really just seemed because Pepper dumped him. And really, can you blame Pepper? No, but...
No.
Kind of amazing
really,
it's taken this
reaction
long.
And the lines that he says in the beginning really made it like, oh, I'm just doing this because Pepper might like me more. And you're like, wait, what? This is a little bit bigger than that, man. And unfortunately, even on Cap's side, it's not so much ego, but it seems very selfish that he's disagreeing with it. Until the moment when he's disagreeing with it on Wanda's behalf, because Wanda is literally being held under house arrest. As I said, though, that's my problem. It's such a narrow focus that it's not, they could have stretched it so much further. And I hate to bring up the original run, but do you think, because I haven't read it, I don't know anything about the original run, other than the fact that the basis is the Superhuman Registration Act, which is a much broader focus. And in that case, absolutely makes sense on Cap's part to be adamantly against any sort of government registration. It makes less sense in the context of this film. Basically, all of them being pissed off about it, the ones that are against it, makes less sense in the context of the film. And the ones that are for it, Black Widow being for it, is like, wait, what? I still don't get that. I understand it. She actually has a great speech and is like, you know, maybe we should do this just for a little while, because she's kind of, you know, manipulative. She knows how to manipulate the system.
Right.
So I get it from that perspective. But still, it's not a strong case for her character to be doing it. It's a stronger case, I think, for other characters to be doing it. Rhodes, to me, is the only one that I was like, he's straight on. That's his character. It makes perfect sense that he's on for this.
He's an army guy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sure.
But so is Sam. So is Cap. Hawkeye has been operating as a government agent his entire career. So it's like, really, guys?
So I think a lot of that goes that with Rhodes, even when he works with Iron Man, like, he's never really been a part of the Avengers. Like, he kind of...
No, he's basically on retainer from...
Right.
From the Army.
Right. And
or
so,
Air Force,
so
I
think. From his perspective, right, he's been grown up in and developed as a superhero within the context of the military. And so from his perspective, the institution is, like, sacrosanct in a way, right? It's about preserving the institution. But for all of the rest of them, they've all been part of what was supposedly a sanctioned institution. Well, not all of them, but more or less have been a part of it and have watched it become eaten from the inside by a cancer. And so I think for a lot of the characters, the motivation is like, well, no, because look what happened the last time we had this governing body.
Right. And if they had any lines like that,
yeah,
I would have been like, sure thing.
Sure.
But they didn't. They did not tie this very well into the context of the rest of the films.
Yeah.
And I've watched the rest of the films, so I know exactly what has happened, except I will admit in Iron Man 3, because I stopped liking those movies a long time ago. But other than that, I get it. But it's not there. It's not contained within the whole that is Captain America Civil War. So, unfortunately, where they could have really pushed the angle of the registration being a truly terrible thing, particularly with the modern context of, you know, Trump calling for registering Muslims, and he's not the only one. With things like that, being in our modern sort of zeitgeist, the fact that they didn't touch on it was, I think it was a little bit weak, and I wish they had pushed it further.
Cool. So I want to get some of the others in here, and I know both Paul and Mike had a hand, so I want to jump to you, Paul, and then I'll jump in after Mike. So, Paul, what did you want to jump in on here?
I got so much to jump in on. It's funny. Okay. So going back to the governing body, and as you say, Jen, they could have tied this in, but let's think back to the Avengers, the first Avengers movie, where that World Council was ready to nuke New York to stop the aliens, and Iron Man has to go against them to stop and grab the nuclear missile to go attack the Chitauri ship. So I can see why. Now, it would be nice if Captain America actually pointed out why Captain America would be very leery of anybody. And by the time we get through Winter Soldier and finding that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been infested with Hydra since its beginning, of course he wouldn't want the UN to be controlling the Avengers. He understands the people. He trusts his people. I mean, there could be Hydra agents in the UN that probably are, so...
Right.
I think it's guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
One cut off one head, two come up. Yeah. So it would have been nice if the movies had tied this in. Now, on the other hand, the other thing to consider, and now this might be a controversial opinion. If you think about all the movies as kind of a long extended TV season, then I think maybe the directors and maybe Marvel's is expecting us to put this all together and fill in the dots, however unreasonable that is.
Yeah.
That is because they only have so much screen time. So like, okay, why is Captain America like, you think back a few episodes to the Avengers and to Winter Soldier, like, oh, that makes sense. Even though they're not saying it on screen. I know that's a matter of, not even showing or telling. It's the,
but think the audience back to Civil War real quick. How much did it take for them to establish the freedom versus surveillance? One line.
Yeah.
Well, and some really good visuals.
And a nice,
pleasant stroll.
Super strong line. It was one of the best lines in the film. And that's all it took.
Well, and it also took...
It should have been all it would take for this
film. Well, no, it wasn't just all it took. There was also, like, the really romantic walk with Sam Jackson, where he shows him his shiny toys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of established, and they have, like, this conversation, which is all about this surveillance problem, right? And it's
basically one line from Cap, though.
Well, it's sort of one line from Cap, but it's all...
And an entire narrative from Nick Fury, granted, but...
There's more than one line, though. They have a sort of loose conversation where it's very clear their worldviews do not line up.
Oh, that's... Mm-hmm. that's
and
that yes.
becomes very obvious. And you're right, Cap gets probably the best line of the lot, but it's very clearly established it's in one scene versus one line. I think it's very clearly established in one scene. And I think that is the issue that is somewhat here, is that... And I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead of everybody, but we're on the topic, so I'm just going to do it.
Well, let Mike go.
No, go ahead and finish, Sean.
Look, I'll shut up, because it'll be quick, and Mike can bounce off of this. So the issue that I have is the way that this film frames that political narrative doesn't at times make a lot of sense. So the biggest problem is the motivation issue. Why is the the UN, United Nations community, trying to get this done? Well, let's show you every instance in which superheroes have blown stuff up, but let's not talk about the instances that you're showing us in which they're blowing stuff up in the process of saving the goddamn world. So they show the Hulk blowing things up on the side of a wall, but they neglect to mention, yes, but a dude from another world was invading the entire planet and was going to wipe out mankind. Right? It seemed to me like they were trying to say, like, superheroes are bad, but really it all comes down to, no, the problem isn't that superheroes are bad, it's that the ones that are bad are the ones trying to do the wrong thing for the right reason, which is Tony Stark. It should always have been a focus on, you brought in Ultron, you brought this death and destruction upon the world, not all these other instances. Like, everybody's getting pissed off because they killed a bunch of Wakandans while trying to save a city from some crazy guys trying to get a bomb, or I can't remember what they were getting. They were probably getting pizza, whatever, right? But they get pissed off at it's Wakandans, people that are somehow special, right? They get killed in that bombing, but they seem completely uninterested in the larger conversation, which I have big issues with because I didn't find that entirely believable. It seemed to me that what they should have been hammering home is the Ultron problem, which is the problem that Tony should have hammered home. He should have said, I'm also protecting the world from myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. he doesn't seem to ever want to admit that then in this. There are times when it seems like he wants to say, like, it is kind of me, but it's always like he never wants to fully just admit. And he always uses we. He always says we, like, we have to do this thing. We have to protect the world. We have to do this. But I guess I found it inconsistent in how it was presented to us. It was really didn't make sense at times. And I don't know.
And then he gets super pissed off about, spoiler alert, Bucky, you know,
killed his dad.
Doing things that weren't under his control in any way, shape, or form.
But somehow
forgets that he's very much culpable for a lot that has happened.
Oh, no, yeah. Bucky doesn't forget that he's culpable.
No!
Oh, you mean Tony!
Still Tony. Gets super pissed off about it.
I understand, though, because that's framed very, very explicitly at the very beginning, that this is, like, one of Tony's big hang-ups, is what's happened to his family and the guilt he feels
granted.
About... Yeah.
That's going back to Iron Man 1.
Yeah, and Widow marks it very clearly of, like, are you capable of not being a raging egomaniac for one goddamn second? And the answer is no.
No. That's the problem with Tony. He's impulsive. And I think if they'd done more to kind of really focus on, this is Tony trying to do, again, he's trying to do he's doing the wrong thing for the right reasons, but it's because he doesn't trust himself to make the right decisions, and that's why he's doing it. I would find that much more interesting than this kind of, like, superheroes blow shit up and people get hurt. Yeah, but let's neglect to talk about most of the time they're doing that, they're saving the whole goddamn world. You know, I mean, for fuck's sake, Spock says the line to us, right?
Yeah, and the person that's overseeing all of this and making sure that they, you know, sign it is Ross.
Well, and that's a problem in and of itself, sure. Yeah.
We've seen what happens when he tries to do things, so...
I think if they had shown a visual of when the Hulk and Iron Man and the Hulkbuster wreck an African city, that would have been a totally legitimate visual, because that made nothing saving the world from anybody. They just wrecked the city trying to beat each other into a pulp.
I think
it should have been all stuff from Age of Ultron.
They include stuff from that scene in the montage, I think, that Ross shows. Like, because he's like ticking off cities. He's like,
I missed it.
They do.
Yeah, it's like New York, whatever the place in, was it South Africa?
I think it's South Africa, yeah.
Yeah, whatever, the fight with the Hulkbuster, and then Sokovia, and then Lagos. Like, so they do count through all of those.
Okay, I missed it.
Yeah. Part of the problem here, and I kind of listening to folks say, talking about, you know, is this an Avengers movie? Is this a Captain America movie? For me, it's like one act of a Captain America movie, and then two acts of an Avengers movie.
Yeah.
And like what Jen says about the politics, they step away from the politics and get so deeply personal and gain kind of emotional engagement for the individuals in a really intense fashion, but totally drop the political angle. And I was also very frustrated by that, because I think it was interesting to see how both Cap and Tony, for me, were right in ways that meant that the other
had a complicated setup. Like, Cap is going, okay, systems have let us down and have been corrupted and kept us from being able to do the right thing. So that's where I'm from. And then Tony sees, oh, we do need to be put in check. And he's projecting, as folks have said, that he's making his problems about everybody, but that they cannot operate without any accountability. But then they both go about it really wrong. Cap makes everything personal, and he wants to have exceptions. And then Iron Man and the other kind of pro-Sokovian Accords throw them out entirely to go and chase somebody in an emergency, because that's what you have to do if you're a superhero. You have to chase somebody in an emergency. You can't wait around and get approval. And then Iron Man goes and recruits a child soldier.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not to mention Lex Luthor.
Once again, doing whatever he wants.
Precisely.
Yeah. I think when Jen, you were saying earlier that issue of, Captain seems like the character who's grown up the most. Tony isn't the most grown up character. He keeps making the same mistakes, but it seems like he is incapable of recognizing them. Or if he does recognize them, he can't stop himself. And it almost, in a way, makes Tony the real villain.
Or the tragic figure.
He's this tragic figure who is the villain of the world, which is ironic given that we know he's not. He doesn't mean to be, but it's sort of like he has like an illness he can't control.
Yeah, in some ways this was a better Iron Man movie than at least the second and third ones.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a story though that we've come to, when you go to Iron Man 3 and you think about the end of that film, it's a film that's really about Iron Man dealing with PTSD. In the way Iron Man deals with PTSD, which is not like anyone else. it's a film that at the end of it makes it seem like he started to get his stuff together. But then, of course, Ultron happens. And it's sort of like whatever confidence he gained in sort of his relationship with Pepper and kind of working through some of those issues, like Ultron exacerbates the problems even worse. Like this seems like an Iron Man who is not dealing with PTSD anymore. He is suppressing it so far down and trying desperately to like put the puzzle pieces in place, but the puzzle pieces are wet and they're expanding and he can't get it right. And he's just desperately trying to, and nothing is working. He is tragic, right? What's said that he is one of the most tragic figures, I think, in this, in some ways, almost more tragic than Bucky, at least in the presentation. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't think he actually is more tragic than Bucky. I think some of it is Tony being a dumbass, but I think part of it is like, you know, Bucky, right? He's brainwashed. He has all this stuff that he can't control, literally can't control, right? The code words that are said, right? That basically just shut down any free will he has.
Right.
That he is tragic in that way, but I feel like the tragic focus is really on Tony. How far down is Tony going to go in the desperate need to do what he thinks is the right thing to do while ignoring the real reasons for why he's doing the things he's doing.
And that kind of boils down my problem, is that I didn't get the resolution that I think was required. Hopefully it'll happen. Again, spoiler alert, Bucky's put on ice, so we clearly didn't get a resolution in this film for Bucky's tragedy. And the fact that he is probably dealing with more PTSD than anybody. And I wish that we had been able to explore that.
I felt like I did get the ending I wanted. I mean, I found the final fight scene.
Oh, it was pretty amazing, but
I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm just weird, but like the moment at which I'm big spoiler right here. Stop right now. Do not listen past this. If you yell at me because I ruined the ending of the movie for you, I'm going to send your email to spam bots.
Okay.
Sean, that's too much.
Okay, maybe that's too much. Yep, I will scream at you on Twitter. I got really emotional at the ending fight scene, because here are these two guys who they started out kind of not liking each other, kind of hating each other because they're different methods, but then they became good friends and they had a lot of respect for each other. And we saw that kind of brotherly camaraderie, a little bit of that love that was there. And then that ending fight scene where like Tony loses it because he's seen that all along Bucky has been the one responsible for the death of his parents. And more importantly, that Cap the person who knows is that Cap knew all along and didn't tell him. And he loses it, and they have this fight, and of course, Tony loses in this really just, there was so much emotion caught up in that moment when he slams the shield into the power source and kills the suit. And it's just, you see Tony, his face, like all of that, like, I don't know how to describe it. I just felt so bad for Tony, even though I kind of hate him a bit. It was so like this guy who like had the world stripped from him and he had nothing left. And it was really heartbreaking, I felt, in that moment. So I see, Mike, you have a hand, so please jump in here.
Yeah, in that, like, because probably the most heartbreaking thing for me in that very last fight scene is that when Cap raises the shield for the very last time, Tony raises his hands because he's expecting that Cap is going to kill him.
Yeah.
That was my read on the scene, that he was directly fearing for his life, and that Cap then goes for the power source. And how affecting has that got to be for Cap, for this guy to think that you're going to kill him? Really is the moment of the biggest break for Cap in that moment, aside from like fearing for Bucky, that maybe for me is the reason why he listens and kind of goes with it when Tony is yelling at him to you know that he doesn't deserve the shield, that he like loses faith in himself there. And so that moment was that whole bit was incredibly powerful. I totally agree.
Yeah, and why he abandons the shield.
We
see the image of the claws, and it's almost like the claw marks on the shield, which is a callback to what Black Panther's doing. It's like, Cap has found himself unworthy to wield the shield. It's kind of like an Excalibur moment in some ways, Arthurian legend. He's not worthy of the weapon, and so he must cast it down until he becomes worthy again to take it up.
That's like when Thor loses his hammer.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
I hope they do that in movies. They're not going to, but I wish they would. Okay, I have to say really quick, I agree with all three of you. That was, I think, the most powerful. That ending was incredible. The entire last 10 minutes of the film. The scene with T'Challa and our villain.
Zemo.
Was not so powerful. And that aspect of the film I loved probably more than anything else.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, to me, okay, it was a perfect resolution for this movie. But it wasn't, again, it bothered me the entire time that it wasn't a Captain America movie. And I didn't get the resolution I wanted from what had been built up in Winter Soldier.
That's
which
fair.
Was the thing that I was disappointed with. I didn't get the resolution for Cap and Bucky that I think was required, and they didn't bother with. And for Bucky's character, Bucky, I don't think got his resolution. Which I don't think is fair to the character, in the long haul. But this movie was well contained in that scene for sure was a great resolution for Iron Man and Captain America in the context of what has happened during the movie. It was an absolutely incredible scene for Zemo. It was an incredible scene for T'Challa. You had a great arc. This was, probably why Ultron was so disappointing. Somehow they had how many characters in this movie, and they had better arcs for almost all of them than they did for even a single one in Age of Ultron. It was so fun to watch Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to put that in there now. It was so much fun.
Birth of a superhero. Or taking up the mantle.
Yeah. It was great. And Chadwick Boseman was fantastic. His story and the resolution he gets with Zemo was brilliant. I think I totally agree with Sean in that Zemo is probably one of the best villains that I've seen in a superhero movie, period.
Because he wasn't trying to punch the superheroes.
Well, he can't.
Nope.
He can't punch them. Yeah. Physically.
He could, but.
Well, I mean, he could, but like, honestly, it wouldn't matter. Right?
And Ant-Man could take him.
What makes him so much more terrifying is, Ultron can make tons of robots that punch you to death.
Right? All these other ones can do that. Yeah. Watching it, the scene when he gets, he's the first scene that he's listening to the phone call from his wife.
Oh, yeah. And you realize the messages.
Lost it the second time I saw it. Because the first time, you don't have the context until the end. The second time, I just was like, sob, sob, sob. Most touching moment, I think, of the entire movie. This time, you know, I lost it. Yeah. It was amazing.
It's sad because you realize he's had all of these messages that he's probably been listening to. You hear him listen and on phones, right? And he seems to be, there's a couple times when he's talking to someone. And I think what he's doing is he's listening to his messages and then deleting them.
No. He just has one.
Is it just the one?
It's just one. He replays twice and he deletes it at the end.
Oh, okay. Which, I thought it was more than one. No.
And that's,
I guess it's wrong.
That's, you know, it was like his moment of resolution. He thought, dun, dun, dun. I really hope he comes back as the villain that he apparently is in the comic books, because that's going to be amazing.
He's a great villain. Fantastic. He plays mind games.
Yeah. So
he mind fucks everybody.
So good.
And that's what makes him so much more effective than anyone else. So,
Going to that last act, I'm like, okay, so we're going to have for our final act of this battle, we're going to have Iron Man and Captain America and Bucky fighting the other Winter Soldiers. No! Surprise!
Yeah.
I was so worried that they'd throw T'Challa in the mix, and then when they didn't, I was like, I was in awe. That's when I started bowing down.
It's the right decision, I think.
You guys did this perfectly. Yeah. Well played. So, well played indeed.
Okay, so we should probably bounce to some of the other topics so that we can actually get this episode out in a reasonable time. So we've hashed out a lot of the plot-based stuff. So I think, Mike, you wanted to talk about the characters in particular, so we might want to bounce to you.
Yeah,
and
so
have you talk there.
For me, part of the biggest difference between this film and Age of Ultron, in my kind of experience of it, is that I felt so much more for and about the characters in this film than I did in Age of Ultron, and especially the big action set pieces in this one. The airport sequence, and then the final fight that we've already talked about a little bit. During the airport sequence, maybe I was doing more kind of reading between the lines or interpolating, and fairly or unfairly, I felt like I had a good sense of why the various characters were in that big airport fight, that there were characters who wanted to impress somebody. There are characters who wanted to live up to kind of Captain America's, the shadow that he's filled. There are characters who are fighting that don't dislike each other at all. There are characters who really don't like each other, and they're using this fight as an excuse to carry out their fight. Like, T'Challa is there to kill Bucky. He doesn't really care a whole lot about Cap, by any indication, but he's using that fight to pursue his own individual agenda. You get Black Widow versus Hawkeye, where they're fighting and they're still very collegial. Because we've seen them together. We've seen them be on opposite sides of fights before in a different context. And we know that they're both, that they've been around and they've been kind of spy type characters. So they're they're kind of more bantery. And then you have Captain America versus Spider-Man, where Spidey is, he's trying to do the right thing and he's been misled by Iron Man because he's been kind of, sold a pile of BS, and a promise of, a promise of a scholarship, and he's trying to fight Steve. Steve is trying not to, he's trying to kind of talk this kid out of it, and that there's so much emotion and character relationships in the big set piece scene, and then in the end, that it meant so much to me that the emotion was really present, and it motivated the action in a way that I don't feel like it did, especially in the last sequence in Age of Ultron. I don't think the emotional through lines were really good in Ultron. And the kind of the other action film it reminded me the most of was Fury Road, in the way that emotion was present and conveyed through characterization via action.
Totally agree with all of that.
Yep. Plus one. Plus 10.
A plus, sir. Yeah, A plus.
I hope that other films realize kind of that power of characterization and making us care about how fighting works. And, I think we've seen it some in films like Deadpool. And that this is a mode that superheroes can really succeed along.
Right. And you see it, too, in the earlier fight in the stairwell when Bucky is first apprehended.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a great fight.
Very few things said in that scene, but you understand implicitly what each one of those characters, Captain America and Bucky, are trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And then when T'Challa gets into the fight, you absolutely understand what he's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, like, Crossbones has so much menace.
Oh, God. And resentment
in his fight. Yes. Like, it's like the choreography and the way that the fights were used to convey emotion just was really impressive for me.
Yeah. I do still feel spoiled by the editing in Fury Road, which was so
Praise yes.
And I'm still kind of disappointed that we're still getting the Bourne series method of editing fight sequences, but
you're upset that we're getting another Bourne movie,
I have no problem with the Bourne movies as Bourne movies. I am upset that every action sequence that has been actioned since then, except for Fury Road, has been edited exactly like
that. That is a fair point. So
we'll see maybe some more films using that kind of stronger, clearer editing, but people have to hire directors that can do it. They have to hire directors with that discipline and with that sense of clarity. Like, Margaret Sixel can only edit so many movies, right?
I know, which is a bummer. Come on, Margaret, edit them all!
if only that were possible.
Well, and I have a lot of hope for the Black Panther movie, mm-hmm. since it is going to be directed by the same guy who did Creed, which...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Was really well done. So, oh my God, what have you had your head under a rock?
I saw the movie. Shut your mouth. I should know who edited it. Come on. Or directed it, whatever.
There is a reason that hashtag Black Panther So Lit is trending very strongly right now.
Yeah, I haven't been on Twitter today.
Because the Black Panther movie is going to be amazing based on directing staff and cast.
I imagine it's going to be really good, and I cannot wait for the people to have little hissy fits so I can giggle.
Oh, they've been all over the
place. It is going to make so much money.
It's going to make birds.
So much money.
I can't wait till my royalty checks come in.
I think it's actually trending higher than Captain America Civil War, and the movie's not even coming out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and Marvel... So. I've been seeing
2 years.
Reports that there may not actually be that much Black Panther merch out there, which would be a ridiculous embarrassment.
Yes. Oh.
Like, someone was saying that they could not find a Black Panther t-shirt for a 6 to 10 year old boy when they were in Target or something. So that's a total embarrassment.
That is.
And
money left on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they continue to not learn the lesson. Or learn it very slowly and too late.
Yeah. It's stupid.
Oh, so frustrating.
I would wear a Black Panther t-shirt.
Right? He's amazing. And the comic is, like, just killing it on sales right now.
Yeah.
So. Largely because of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's because of who's written it.
Yeah.
Because who's writing it right now.
Coates is doing an incredible job. Add in the movie. There are a lot of people who have become fans of the character because of this movie, and are now picking up the comic book. Tons.
Yeah, but it was already selling like
hotcakes
before.
Oh, yeah, it was already selling like hotcakes. I guarantee that it just hit freaking roof right after the movie came out, though.
It wouldn't surprise me if it got a boost.
Yeah, a very nice boost. There's been... if you follow the conversations, which I do because I'm weird,
you are. Yeah. It's okay though.
I am, but back to the sort of the set piece. I think I totally agree with Mike on all of it, obviously. But it was so much fun. I just have to reiterate how much fun it was to see. But Paul's going to talk about this in a minute. But Ant-Man was just a joy and probably one of the best parts of that fight scene in terms of. Just sheer awesomeness. It definitely, I think, sets the bar for action sequences in general, but definitely action sequences again amongst superpowered people, which they haven't done a particularly good job of up until this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's fair. So why don't we jump to Paul right now, because he wants to talk about a very particular... Oh, excuse me, I just burped. That's wonderful. I'm just going to leave that in. Paul wants to talk about the particular scene in question, the airport sequence.
I want to talk about the airport sequence. Mike has made some really good points I was going to make, so I'm just going to extend from there. There's lots of love about this airport sequence. I was hearkened back in watching this back to the first Avengers movie where we have the fight on the mountain between Cap and Iron Man and Thor, and they're basically fighting over Loki, and no one knows who each other is, and they're just wanging at each other. I mean, but it just seems to be it's an excuse for superheroes to fight. Now, let's look at this airport scene. We have clear stakes. We know what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it. Cap and Bucky are trying to get to the jet so they can get out and go fly and find the super soldiers. Clear lines of what, and the other side's trying to stop them from escape. So clear lines of one's trying to get through, one's trying to stop them. We know why they're doing it. We have clear stakes and clear goals and clear motivations. And we even get two unexpected wild cards. We get Spider-Man on one side and we get Ant-Man on the other. And the movie, I mean, yeah, it's boring editing, but it solidly keeps switching back between the various fights, seeing how things go. There's an ebb and flow to the fights that Spider-Man's early arrival and using the webbing moves things slightly towards Iron Man's side. Then we get the Ant-Man going into the Giant Man mode, and then suddenly the fight has moved almost decisively towards Captain's side, and until of course Spider-Man remembers his Empire Strikes Back and takes down Ant-Man in one of the best scenes of the whole movie. It's Empire Strikes Back mixed with Gulliver. It's wonderful. I love that. It's like, oh my god, yes, they're going to do that.
So good.
So good. And then, of course, as Mike said, we get Hawkeye and Black Widow pulling their punches, and until Scarlet Witch says, you were pulling your punches, and just slams her opponent out of the way in disgust and anger. And we have T'Challa murderously trying to go after Bucky, not caring about anything else. So it's this wonderful through line of everything that's happened to the movie to this point, and all capped off with that final confrontation where Black Widow changes sides with one blast and willing to take the consequences because that's what she thinks is right. So for a 6-on-6 battle, as it were, it was going to take a flip, and it was only a question of how they're going to do the flip in order to make it work, and it was done at a dramatically significant moment in an excellent way. It was an excellent cap off scene. I could have wished for maybe a couple more Fury Road style edits to that rather than the more kinetic, but because sometimes the shaky cam I wasn't so happy with. But otherwise it is the punchy heart of the movie, and it is miles better than the comparable punchy Barts of Age of Ultron. I mean, you look at Age of Ultron, you see that opening sequence in the forest is a little too busy and a little too slick. And the one at the end with the robots, you can't even really, they're fighting mindless robots. So who really cares? Here they're fighting each other tooth and nail with throwing all their powers against each other, and it just works. This movie and this fight scene in particular, this airport scene, had everything that Age of Ultron did not.
And so of course, that scene was filmed in Atlanta and the Atlanta airport.
I did not know that.
Some people flying into Atlanta were very confused that day.
Why is there a giant Ant-Man?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even mention. Oh, yeah. Thank you. I want to disrupt one thing. Thank you. You reminded me. They fight in an airport. So I was hoping, and I was not disappointed, that airplanes were going to be used as weapons.
Yeah.
That would have been left on the table had someone not thrown an airplane or used an airplane as a club as Ant-Man does. They went for the necessary prop, and it was joyful. And that scene also has the very emotional beat towards the end where what happens to, to Rhodes, yeah, getting hit by friendly fire of all things. And you did notice that when he falls, both Iron Man and Sam, although they've been fighting each other, both go shooting down immediately to find out what happened and try to help him, which I thought was a really nice character beat. Like, yeah, Sam could have gotten away, but no, it's more important.
They're not enemies by choice. None of them are. Except for T'Challa hating Bucky. But even Bucky, you know, tries to explain, I'm not the one who killed your father.
Right.
But T'Challa is consumed with revenge at that point in time. So, but and then I just have to throw in the Vision and Scarlet Witch moments were just so sweet and wonderful.
Yeah.
Make me so happy.
Oh yeah, and Spider-Man fighting Bucky and we had been told we'd been told that Spider-Man was strong because we had seen a gif of him grabbing the thing. But there he is fighting Bucky. He's got the arm. And he's twisting it because he's fascinated by it. That was so
dumb. Well, the fact that he's as strong as Bucky, nicely done.
Yeah, I mean, thank the gods, this Spider-Man movie that's coming, they don't have to make an origin story because they got the origin story this movie.
Thank goodness.
We can just have a Spider-Man movie, praise the gods.
Yes. Well, Iron Man's supposed to be in it, so that'll be interesting. Very interesting. Oh, and sorry, the last thing about that scene is I love the budding bromance between Falcon and Bucky, because that's awesome too.
Well, because it's like the love-hate relationship. Under ship universe, it's like old boyfriend, new boyfriend.
Right?
But yeah. Like
on a more
textual level, it's like old squad mate, new squad mate, right?
Yes.
Because they're all military, ex-military, and like, you have that intense relationship with somebody you fought beside, and now like that dynamic has changed because they have another kind of partner in battle. That I think that it had very fun bits and also some deeper bits.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So well done,
Sean. Thoughts?
You know, that particular scene I like quite a bit. I mean, I'll talk about some other stuff later. But I mean, for the most part, I liked that scene. We've already mentioned it, the Black Widow and Hawkeye fight. I really liked. I think I liked that one because
Arrow guy.
Yeah, it's Hawk. What?
Arrow guy.
Oh, Arrow guy. Sorry. I like that. I think mostly because it was the one fight there that was mostly actual physical. Because for the most part, everyone's fighting something that I'm assuming isn't real. There wasn't a real spider kid.
Everyone's got a gimmick.
Yeah, everyone's got a gimmick, but them too. So, I mean, but for the most part, I thought that sequence was really well done. And yeah, I mean, I like that sequence. I really had wished though, cause I like the Spider-Man that they got here. The kind of young Spider-Man who's kind of still a smart mouth kid. I like that. I just wish he had more to do in the movie. Than just to kind of show up and be sort of like Tony Stark's, like,
that's not his movie.
Playing card. I know it's not his movie, but I didn't think that there was enough for him to do. But
the only reason he's in it is because they finally got him.
I know. Yeah. But you know.
I mean, like, they had to reshoot scenes, apparently. So.
Yeah, but compared to Spider-Man 3, The Amazing Spider-Man 1, and The Amazing Spider-Man 2, it's the 10 minutes we get of Spider-Man in it. And this movie is better than any of those movies.
Yeah.
So
I'm still mad that we're getting Spider-Man before anything else, but
yeah,
I do love just me being salty.
Yeah. I do love the reveal of Giant Ant-Man, though.
Oh my god, yeah. That made me
very happy.
Oh
my god. So, yeah, I mean, I like a lot of the fight scenes in general in the movie, especially the ones where they're physically fighting. Those I really, really love the most because they're really well done. The choreography in the very first fight scene I thought was really good. And anytime two people are like physically fighting, I just love the heck out of it because it's so, the choreography is so good. And Cap's a badass. Like he does flips and stuff. Like he's cool. Like if I could do that, man, I would be so sexy.
Your shield doesn't obey the laws of physics.
Yes. Yeah. I love it.
Spidey just nerding throughout that entire fight sequence.
Yeah.
I love that they were both basically stand-ins for all of us, you know, like sitting there squeeing, and I'm shaking your hand too long, aren't I?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, that's kind of all I really wanted to say. I mean, I don't have anything, I mean, like, how can you not like that scene?
I don't know.
I guess people who don't have any joy in their lives and just think
people
that everything
who don't like
is
action.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And period probably wouldn't like
I
it,
repeat
I
my previous statement. People have no joy. I'm just kidding. but anyway, is there more you guys want to hash out, or because it kind of leads into my topic?
Let's go to your topic.
No, yeah,
go
into it.
So
there's other things that I could talk about, but please, not on this particular scene, so it doesn't matter.
So the thing I wanted to talk about is the CG. So this is something I think that I've said kind of on other podcasts before, but like I'm getting really tired of CG. And I think oftentimes because it's being used in ways that I don't find either very effective or as sort of like, we want to be able to do this fancy thing, but you can't do it in real life. So we're going to do this instead of trying to find a way around it. And in most of the Marvel movies, that's not really been a problem. Like there's some things where you have a character like Iron Man, where like, yeah, like you got to CG the suit. Like that's just inevitable. So the fight scenes for that are going to be CG. That's fine. In this movie, there were a couple of scenes that really just bugged me, particularly, and we've had a couple instances in the past movies, but it's sort of been like one, and it was like, yeah, I'll just let it pass. But this one, there were a lot. And in particular, when characters who otherwise are physical beings on the screen are doing any kind of long jumping, they like CG them in a way that they just look really phony to me. They look like weird, like Play-Doh figures dancing around on top of cars. And it took me out of the movie because I kept seeing it and going, well, that was obviously not Chris Evans. That was obviously not whoever it was supposed to be. And the scene in particular that really bugged me was the chase scene in the middle of the movie. And it's just because I don't know about anyone else, but I can't take seriously the idea of people running at seemingly normal pace, but yet somehow running at like 65 miles an hour.
Oh, that was weird.
And it's
you're not alone on that.
It's because, like, you know, sometimes people can do it and they can make it almost kind of work with some trickery with a camera. This, they didn't really do that. And I kept thinking, like, yeah, I get that he's super powered, but, like, Captain America's, you know, his gait is not that far. Like, he's not running, like, a 45-foot gait each step. So his legs have to move faster for him to go this fast. So it looked really hokey. It just didn't feel good enough. It would be one thing if he was jumping from car to car, which would also be ridiculous. But at least we've seen him jump really high. We've not seen anything that looks like it would be reasonable for him to. I don't know. That stuff, I think it's just I'm growing tired of it. And I think it's largely like a fatigue problem for me, where so many of these big movies are big, giant CG festivals. And I really want to go back. I mean, part of the reason why Mad Max worked so well for me was I knew there was CG in there. It's in there somewhere. But somehow they made me forget that it was CG or that it existed. I felt like I was in this moment. I was there in a physical world and crazy shit was happening. And that's what I want. I want to be able to do the thing where CG is enhancing, not becoming the replacement, because it just pulls me out as soon as I know I'm looking at CG, as soon as I realize it's not a real thing and I can't turn off that part of myself. It's one thing, like I can turn myself off when I watch Iron Man, because I'm like, look, if I'm going to even watch this movie, I have to turn that off because I'm going to have a dude flying around in a metal suit. And I know they don't have Robert Downey Jr. flying around in that because his body would turn to liquid if he was doing those things.
And largely they do a pretty good job with the suit, period. I mean, it seems like they've spent more time on that than they have on other aspects of the CG in these films.
Yeah, because they get so much use out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I guess that's just kind of the issues. Like, I overall really enjoyed the film, but I just...
You're too picky?
Yeah, when you think about it, like, when this film is really, really, really good with its action sequences, it's not when stuff's flying around and there's CG people. It's when, like, you have two physical beings punching each other in the face.
Yeah,
those are the best.
I have to say I totally agree, because I think there were two moments that actually drove me a little bit insane. I think they largely did a fantastic job with Wanda's powers, except in the moment, and again, in Lagos, my apologies, in Lagos, they the cloud, the smoke twirl thing, the tornado that she generates, it was unnecessarily large. I think they could have edited that down and relied less on CG for that moment in time. And there's also a point that a truck is going through a street, and directly after, they have a completely CG truck slamming into CG cars. They have a real truck. And I'm like, dude, you have a real truck slamming into real cars in this scene. Why did you just choose to go CG on the previous scene? This makes no sense to me. But by and large, I think they did a good job of keeping it down. Whereas Age of Ultron just was like, throw CG at the screen. Big and messy and amazing and not actually amazing. This one kept it fairly well contained most of the time.
Which was
nice to see.
But when it didn't contain it, it became too obvious for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's sort of like, I felt like Age of Ultron could mask some of that a little bit by the fact that most of its CG stuff was like robots. And it's like, yeah, like it doesn't look real, but like the robots ever really look real, because I know they're not, right? So I just kind of like, just let it go. But then it does stuff where it's like, but that's too far. And I think the problem with Age of Ultron CG is it goes too far too often. But in this one, it felt like there's those moments like where like Captain jumps like on a car and then jumps again, and I'm just like, well, what? That wasn't even Chris Evans. That wasn't like his body. Like it's like they literally made Play-Doh people. It was like Gumby. Gumby's what did it. He jumped the thing. They put Gumby in a Captain American suit and he went, blah, blah, and like the little orange donkey came behind him later. Yeah. Sorry. That's going to be a reference for the kids they're not going to get.
No. Those kids these days.
Although you can buy Gumby t-shirts at, I believe, Target. So go get them, kids. It'll make you cool. So Mike, you had a hand. Go ahead.
I wanted to bring up one part where they did practical cinematography, because I saw it only on like a special featurette or something. So when Cap jumps out the window and Bucky jumps out after him, or the other way around, the camera person jumps out after Bucky as Sebastian Stan is jumping out of a fixture into the blue screened or green screened padding, and they had that camera person on. Like on wires and things. So they did some really cool practical stuff in there mixed in with the weird CG.
Yeah. And those are the scenes that I think are super successful too.
Yeah. I didn't even realize how intense that shot was when I saw it through the first time. Only when I saw like the production bit, I was like, oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that stuff when you get little production notes and you realize just how visceral and real a scene was made. It adds that depth to it that you just feel like, yeah, this feels even better now. Like when every time you find out like, yeah, that guy actually punched that dude in the face, and you're like, yeah, he actually did. No wonder it felt so real.
I gotta say again, like in terms of the action sequences, I was really glad that they clearly used the same guy who choreographed the Daredevil scene.
God, those are so good too.
Like, it was a very similar, you know, stairwell scene.
Yeah, but all the emotional stakes are like super different, which is cool.
Super different, which made it fascinating to watch. I really just want to watch those two back to back. Just be like, that would be cool.
Favorite fights on stairs.
I feel like on Daredevil, like whoever is the stunt guy actually punches people. Because sometimes they're like, I'm looking at like
an accident, but.
Yeah, like on accident, and they're just like, we're going to keep that one. Like, I know his nose is broken, but we're going to keep it. Well, in any case, I think we're at that point where it's time to grade and then say goodbye.
Ooh, but can I say one more thing?
All right, be very quick.
Because I have a question. I don't know if I was the only one. Maybe I'm reading too much of it. And I really want to hear, I want somebody to write something about this. There are at least three moments in this movie where the concept of moving or not moving is brought up. Beautifully, obviously, when Sharon Carter is giving the eulogy for Peggy Carter, which is still a little bit angry about that one too, with the speech from that was originally from a J. Michael Straczynski Captain America Spider-Man crossover. When the mob and the war and the press and the whole world tell you to move, your job is to plant yourself like a tree beside the river of truth and tell the world, no, you move. And then the beautiful moment when the Dora Milaje, I'm so excited she's going to be in the Black Panther movie. She better be in the Black Panther movie. Tells Black Widow to move. Or I will move you. And then there's one other moment that I can't even think of right now, which I'm regretting. But I really want somebody out there, I'm just asking this question, please do like a dissertation on that. Because I feel like thematically it's somehow very important, but I'm not smart enough to figure it out. So I just wanted to say that.
I don't know if anyone's done a Captain America dissertation.
The closest thing I've seen is stuff from Abigail Nussbaum. She was less kind to this movie than we were.
Well, she's indeed less kind to the vigilante genre in general. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she has a very valid perspective.
She does. She does.
But yeah, I just wanted to mention that. Mostly so I could squee about the Dora Milaje and mourn Peggy Carter. So
yeah, I hope the Dora Milaje is in the Black Panther movie. Better be.
Well, I know the Dora Milaje will be in there.
Yeah.
As a whole, I want that actress specifically.
Right.
Yeah.
Freaking stunning.
Sign her to a contract, Marvel.
Please, God. She right, probably is. Me. They probably signed her in, and she's going to punch someone.
Have we gotten the confirmation that Lupita is going to be in it? Yeah.
As though you've been expecting that all week. When's the moment when Lupita will be signed up?
Expecting that all week. Have we gotten confirmation yet? This is very important.
You want me to Google it right now, Jen?
No, that's okay. I'll look it up. We're
done. Okay, so, all right. Well, I think we've hashed out some of our issues and some of our non-issues and the things we loved and so on and so forth. So now is the time to grade. So just a quick final thought and a grade from each of you, and we will start with you, Paul.
Okay, so the movie does have we didn't even get into some of the problems I had with how they set up Wakanda in this movie, but maybe that's for another podcast and another time. I highly enjoyed the action sequences capped by the private at the airport. The Spider-Man cameo was a lot of fun. The Ant-Man cameo was a lot of fun. We get lots of messy character interaction and building, and as Jen pointed out, arcs for these characters that we did not get in Age of Ultron. It was splendid fun. I haven't yet seen it again, although I'm plotting to do so. Because Ultron, I didn't want to see the second time. I don't even own that. This one, yeah, this one I'll buy if for that airport sequence alone. 6 on 6, and yeah, it's absolutely glorious. Rating, oh god, you're gonna make me grade this thing. It's not the best MCU movie. I think we all agree it's Winter Soldier at this point. Am I wrong?
Oh, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Is Winter Soldier, it's not Winter Soldier, it's not Avengers 1, it's not Iron Man 1. It's better than Ultron. Oh god, you're gonna make me grade this thing. It's got weaknesses. I'm going to be kind to it and give it a B plus.
That sounds about fair. I mean, keep in mind, like, anytime we've graded films, right? I mean, the grades we gave like 3 years ago, I mean, if we ever rewatch those movies, we might amend those grades.
Yeah, probably.
You know, I think that's all
up
the time.
Up or down.
Like, you know, it may be, like, maybe we all think that, like, Winter Soldier's the pinnacle. That's the best film in Marvel Universe. But then, like, a lot of us gave that A's or A pluses. What if we watch a movie that's, like, miles better than that one? Are we going to give it, like an AQ plus? Right? Or what are we going to do? Right? So it would just have to be a thing where, like, yeah, just whatever. Just do what you think is fair. These grades, they're like meaningless. Like, people listening to us are going like, oh my god, their grades are the most important thing, and he gave it a B plus. Good god, Paul is just a scumbag. He got so wrong.
I obsess over my own grades, thank you very much. And I forgot to rank Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy is a notch below Winter Soldier and a notch above Avengers. So yeah, so B plus. Yeah, I'll stay with the B.
I think that's very fair, Paul. I think that's a fair grade. Yeah. All right. Well, Jen, final thought and your grade.
I'm going to go with my final quibble. I talked to David Annandale about this a little bit, and then I'll give a final, you know, plus. Although it was a quibble for me, but it was a plus for Trish Mattson. So, anyway. So, my final quibble, I am very concerned with Aunt May.
What?
In
what?
The possible future Spider-Man movie, the definite Spider-Man movie, but I have my concerns. They were lessened in the second viewing, but in my first viewing, I was very unnerved by the sexualization of Aunt May. I'm concerned, although major props for casting Marissa Tomei, who is sexy. I will grant you that. But Aunt May is such a... She's the moral framework of Spider-Man. And so grounded that if they only cast Marissa Tomei to sexualize Aunt May, then I'm going to be super pissed off. If they did it because they're actually going to be like, dude, we can have 50-year-old women who are awesome and sexy, then I'm totally okay with it.
Is she 50?
I'm concerned at this point in time.
Is she 50? Concerned.
That's, yes.
She's 50 years old?
Yeah, she's like the same age as Robert Downey Jr.
Holy shit, she's gorgeous.
She's hot. She's totally gorgeous. But if that's the only reason they cast her, so that they could have a young and sexy Aunt May, because 50 is young for Aunt May, then I'm going to be very pissed off, and I'm not excited about that. But if they have other valid... I'm just hoping that they prove me wrong. But with the way that Tony treated her in this, I am concerned.
Well, we kind of expect that of Tony.
Yeah, that's Tony Stark.
I mean, he's okay.
I get that. Second quibble, sorry, second really quick quibble. Dude, why the hell does Howard Stark have the weakest, dumbest vehicle on the planet that was so easy to crash? It's just pissing me off.
For an engineer, it is kind
right?
of pathetic.
He's got a freaking flying car in like 1942. What the hell?
Well, because he's trying to be incognito.
No. Howard Stark does not do incognito.
Well, they don't give him super serum to run around with. That's
yeah, he was
their
on
fault.
Like he
it's
was
not
on
Howard
like a,
Stark's fault.
An SSR shieldy kind of mission.
Yeah.
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 His wife, which is weird.
So why did they give him a car that had absolutely no protection whatsoever?
I think they were going with the Howard Stark and his wife are going on a trip in the sedan.
Yeah, it was dumb, and it pisses me off.
Well, of all the things to be that pissed off about, that seems pretty low in the poll.
Last, the shout to Trish. She was super excited about the kiss between Sharon and Captain America, which I have to say I am excited about as well. I loved Sharon in this.
Oh.
I think she was really fun. I was less happy about the kiss just because it was like, eh. I loved the reaction to the kiss, though.
Yeah.
Sam and Bucky in his car. It was so sweet because it wasn't like, yeah, bro, get her. Bag that chick. No, it was like.
It was that awkward, like, smile.
He's going to have. He's found love. He's our boy, and he's found love. And it was just wonderful and really sweet. So,
well,
that
they've
sense,
all been saying that
excited.
To him, right? Like, I mean, he's been told that by almost every major cast member except Bucky. Well, no, he was told by Bucky in the original
someone?
Cap. In the original Cap, he was told by Bucky, right? Like, you need to buck down and meet a girl.
Oh, and how awesome is it that they gave a shout out to Dot from Peggy Carter? From
Yeah.
That was amazing! Okay, so I'm giving this an A-. I'm basically just following Rotten Tomatoes, 90%, A- score. I think it's a completely fair score. I have to go back and watch Avengers, because everybody's like, yeah, it's so good, but I don't remember liking it that much. I don't know why. I also don't remember being particularly enamored of Iron Man 1, so I don't know. Winter Soldier, I gave like an A++++. but I think A minus is fair. I didn't have the moments. I had some moments of pure joy and sorrow and sadness. But I didn't overall have the absolute enthusiasm to get back and see this movie over and over and over and over again, which I did with Winter Soldier. So
fair enough.
Than A minus.
All right. A minus it is. All right. Mike, final thought and your grade.
I think once I accepted that it was not going to be as much a movie about the Sokovia Accords and it was going to be a movie about Cap and Steve and their feelings, I was totally sold because it did a great job of being a movie about Cap and Steve and their feelings. So I've been vacillating between like a B to an A minus. So I think I'm going to stand on a B plus. Tons of things to love. I will totally be rewatching it a lot. It'll definitely be one of the films that I rewatch often within the MCU, along with Winter Soldier and Guardians and a couple of others. But I do think it has some substantial problems, as we've discussed.
Okay.
Back to you, Sean.
Well, okay. Awesome. Good points all. So, you know, I've really kind of said my piece, so I don't really say that I need to say anything new. You know, for the most part, I really enjoyed it. And so I will give it a B plus as well. You know, I had some issues with some of the aspects of the film, but it was certainly much better than Age of Ultron. And I think I gave Age of Ultron in the B territory, maybe a B minus. I can't remember when I gave it. Doesn't matter. I don't keep a record of these things. My grades are irrelevant. Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. It had a lot of fun. You know, the ending, I think, for me really worked. And I found it really emotional. And it was certainly a much more enjoyable experience than Batman versus Superman could ever hope to be.
Oh, God! Why would you ruin this podcast by bringing that up?
I was hoping we were going to get out of this podcast. Jesus, Sean! That piece of crap. Damn it, Sean!
What
damn
the
it,
hell?
You're welcome. So... yeah, so anyway, so that's our grades. So, Mike has a thing he would like to let us know about, which some people may have already heard about, but that's okay, because you're now going to hear about it from Mike.
Yeah, so I'm still running a Kickstarter for my science fiction series, Genrenauts, which I've been doing in novellas. The first two are already out, and I'm doing a Kickstarter to kind of gather the funds to make four more and do a collected season one box set with all six novellas from that season. So if you like what I have to say about movies and media and genre and storytelling, I put it all into the Genrenauts series. The campaign is just under 80% funded and is looking pretty likely to hit that main goal. And then we're going to go for some stretch goals. But I, you know, would love everybody's help in making this happen and making the campaign as super amazeballs wonderful as possible. You can find that at michaelrunderwood.com/Kickstarter.
The Genrenauts need your help.
Yep.
Yeah. It's okay, because I am secretly a billionaire, and I'm totally going to fund you, Mike.
Okay, you can be my high council member.
If you're a billionaire, and so far you've been holding out on us, I'm just
not
Wow. That's fair.
Now I know where my friendship with Jen lies.
In the Mariana
Trench.
You've
been lying to me for years!
About how much money I have.
I will have an epic fight with you that may or may not involve energy beams and a shield, just so you know.
Don't wreck my apartment, come Convergence, guys.
Yeah, no, don't worry, Paul. It will be fine. So, all right, well, thanks everybody for listening. Do check out Mike's project, and there'll be links in the show notes if you go to skiffingfanny.com. Just look for the episode number. This should be number 45 on the Shoot the Wiz. It'll be in the right-hand sidebar. It's right there. Touch it. It's beautiful. Go on.
It's precious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and other than that, if you would like to let us know your thoughts, the easiest way to do so is via email. You can send us an email at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also find us on the Twitter place, which is @skiffyandfanty. I'm not really sure how else you would tell us how you feel. Don't scream at us while we're at a convention.
Psionic brainwaves?
Yeah.
I mean, you could try that. I don't know how those would work, but I definitely don't recommend screaming at us in public. Because I can guarantee you that's like a one-way ticket to me not giving a shit.
I'm considering getting into ham radio just for Skiffy and Fanty viewers.
There you go. That would work. If you wanted to send us a ham radio message, our frequency is 106.5. I don't actually know what a ham radio frequency is, so I just told you whatever is the radio station for classic rock in town. So, you're welcome.
That's the best awkward ending yet.
Yes. So, on that note, awkward ending and scene. Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.